This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Welcome. Who's first time? Who's the first time here? Wow, thank you. Thank you for coming. It's really inspiring to me, because I remember what it was like to be nervous to go for the first time and not know what would happen and not know what I was getting myself into. So I really appreciate your efforts. And for those of you who are new, my name is Oshin. I'm one of the guiding teachers here at Jikoji. I'm deaf myself. I can't hear. So if at any point while I'm giving my talk, you don't understand what I'm saying, just give me a little sign and I can repeat myself, or maybe we'll let the interpreter even clean up my message. So today is December 1st, eh? We're just beginning today. We will begin our Rohatsu session. And so this is an intensified period of practice where we all come together and do a Zen retreat together. And the name Rohatsu, this Rohatsu session, if you kind of tease apart the individual words, it's something like the eighth day of the 12th month. That's what Rohatsu means. So what we're doing is we're celebrating this week, and we're practicing this week together in honor of Shakyamuni Buddha's enlightenment. But really, it's about our enlightenment too, right? And I just think about this all throughout the Mahayana Buddhist world and the larger Buddhist world. We have thousands, perhaps millions of people taking retreat right now, starting maybe today or tomorrow, and going all week. Sometimes different dates on the calendar. Some of us follow the lunar calendar. Japan is a lot more pragmatic than that. Nope, it's on the 8th every year. But that's what we do. We come together in honor of this auspicious time. But more than that, we're seeking what Buddha sought ourselves. We're doing as Buddha did. We're committing ourselves to waking up right here and right now. In this room, here, now. So, last 2 years, I've read the case from the Denko Roku. I've read the koan that is about Buddha's enlightenment, the story of his enlightenment. So the version of this story is in this Denko Roku, which is a text that's the record of transmitting the light, something like that. I translated to that. So it's a koan collection that was written in about the year 1300. By our great teacher, Keizan Taisho, sometimes called Keizan Zenji. And while Dogen, everybody, I think that's encountered Dogen, encountered Zen, has heard about Dogen. And Dogen is the founder of our specific sect, our specific school of Zen. And while Dogen is the founder, and we often call him the father of Zen, we also have this other figure, Keizan, who we sometimes call the mother of Zen, which I like a lot. Where Dogen was very focused and fierce and mostly concerned himself with writing and the teaching of monks, he also taught others, lay people, but it was really Keizan, who we sometimes call Taiso, the great ancestor, of almost equal importance. Almost equal importance. So where Keizan, he did a lot more to actually build temples. And he visited homes and he worked with the Sangha in a little different way. So sometimes you say, oh, okay, there was the father and there was the mother. I think we need that. We need both of these energies in our practice. And I think we need them in balance too. We need a focused, clear energy that allows us to penetrate and find the truth. But we also need an open, kind, sharing, joyful side of our practice as well. Or as this new Zen idiom sometimes says, we need a strong back and a soft front. And I kind of like that because that's our Zazen posture. That's how we sit down. We sit with strength and nobility and uprightness, but also this softness in our diaphragm, and we allow ourselves to breathe and allow ourselves to be. But really, that softness we're also talking about is the softness that enables us to meet this moment just as it is. So one of Keizan's big contributions in writing was this koan collection, this collection of all these teaching stories, the Denkoroku. And in it, there's 51 poems, 51 cases. And it starts with Shakyamuni Buddha's story of enlightenment. And then it goes on to the next ancestor and the next ancestor, to the second, the third, the fourth, down through 51 generations when it stops. And we're somewhere in our modern time, somewhere around 80 to 90 generations. That's where we are about now. To put that time scale into reference, So down through India, through China and Japan, these stories, these collections of these stories, I got added to and added to, and then were finally codified. And then this book was passed on. And now I think you can get it on Amazon. Okay. So with each of these stories is the story of the ancestor awakening and their awakening story. And that's what all of us are here to do in our own way, is to deepen our own experience and connection to this awakening. And to maybe even lead others and help others with their experience, help them on their path the best we can. So the first story we start with is the Buddha and how he sat down and committed himself to awakening. I won't move from this spot until I'm awakened. And he sat down all the way until around the December 8th. Was when he woke up. So the story goes like this. Shakyamuni Buddha saw the morning star and was enlightened. And he said, I and the great earth and beings simultaneously achieve the way. So I and the great earth and beings simultaneously achieve the way. So that's the koan. That's the whole thing. That's the story for us to memorize and to work with and to bring into our zazen, if that's the kind of meditation we're doing, to bring into our meditation. Lucky the other ancestors pitied us, and they gave us a lot of commentary and pointers and notes to tell us what the story meant. And so Keizan tells us the importance of this story and gives us a little Dharma talk. And I'd like to read his little talk. Shakyamuni Buddha was of the sun race in India. At the age of 19, he leapt over the palace walls in the dead of night, and at Mount Dantaloka, he cut off his hair. Subsequently, he practiced austerities for 6 years. Later, he sat on the adamantine seat, where spiders spun webs in his eyebrows and magpies built a nest on top of his head. Reeds grew up between his legs. Can you imagine? Right up through his cushion. Reeds grew up through his legs, and he sat tranquilly and erect without movement for 6 years. And at the age of 30, on the eighth day of the 12th month, as the morning star appeared, he was suddenly enlightened. These words in the above koan are his very first lion's roar. His lion's roar. So from that time on, for 49 years, he did not spend a day alone, but preached the Dharma for the assembly constantly. He was never without a robe and begging bowl. During that time, he preached to the assembly more than 360 times. Later, he transmitted the treasury of the Eye of True Dharma to Mahakashyapa. And it has been passed down from Mahakashyapa through generation after generation to the present. Truly, it has been transmitted through India, China, and Japan, where the practice of the true Dharma is based on it. And I have to say, and it's been transmitted so many other places, including to America and California here, right? To Jokoji here, and then on from Jokoji even, to us, where I lead a small sangha in Washington, D.C., you know, from Jokoji to D.C., to your heart, right? Keizan continues. He says, the practices of his lifetime are the standards for his descendants. Even though he possessed the 32 marks and 80 minor marks, he certainly looked like an ordinary old monk and was no different from other people. Therefore, after his appearance in the world, through the three ages of the Dharma, the age of the true Dharma, the age of counterfeit Dharma, and the present age of the collapsed Dharma, those who emulate his teachings and conduct model themselves on his deportment, how he behaves, his way, on his deportment, that use what he used each moment while walking about, standing in place, sitting or lying down. Do as the Buddha did. Buddha after Buddha, patriarch after patriarch, and matriarch. Right? Have simply transmitted this so that the true Dharma is not extinguished. And this event clearly indicates this. Even though the method of expression, the various stories, the figures of speech and words was different on the more than 360 occasions during the 49 years. They are nothing more than the expression of this first principle. As if to say, all of his teachings really could be reduced to that or spring forth from that. So this is a very important point for us to realize. So Keizan said, he goes on to say, the so-called I that we use in the main case, I and all beings, right? That so-called I, it's not Shakyamuni Buddha, says Keizan. And yet Shakyamuni Buddhas also come from this I. Not only does Shakyamuni Buddha come from it, but the great earth and all beings also come from it. Just as when a large net is taken up, all the many openings of the net are also taken up. So when Shakyamuni Buddha was enlightened, the great earth and all beings were enlightened. Not just the great earth and beings, but all Buddhas, the past, future, and present were also enlightened. And since this is so, do not think it was Shakyamuni Buddha who was enlightened. You must not see any Shakyamuni Buddha apart from the great earth and beings. Even though mountains and rivers and all their forms flourish in all this great abundance, none are left out of the pupil of Buddha's eye. All of you here are also established in the pupil of Buddha's eye. Not only are you established in it, but rather it's enfolded within you. Also, the pupil of Buddha's eye becomes the fleshy body. It becomes the whole body of each person, standing like an 80,000-foot precipice in each. Therefore, do not think that from the past to the present, there was an eye's bright pupil that was distinct. You are the pupil of Buddha's eye, and Buddha is the entirety of each of you. If this was the way it is, what do you call enlightenment? Let me ask you, monks. Does Buddha become enlightened with you, or do you become enlightened with Buddha? If you say that you become enlightened with Buddha, or that Buddha becomes enlightened with you, this isn't Buddha's enlightenment. Therefore, it's not the principle of enlightenment. If you want an intimate understanding of enlightenment, you should get rid of you. Should get rid of I. We should get rid of Buddha at once and quickly understand this matter of I. Because I is the great earth and beings. Examine this carefully and deliberately. Clarify this I. But as you clarify the meaning of this I, don't lose the discerning I. Therefore, brush aside the myriad things as Fa Yan said. You cannot say whether it brushes aside or it does not brush aside. His Dharma brother Dizhang said, what do you mean by brushing aside myriad things? Therefore, practice fully, sufficiently, develop full mastery, and clarify both Buddha's enlightenment as well as your own. You should figure it out by inspecting this koan in detail, and let the answer flow from your heart without borrowing the words of former Buddhas or contemporaries. On the next day set aside for explanations, I want you to present your understanding with a decisive word. So what I love about all of this, it's very old-fashioned, and you could sit with all these meanings and kind of all of the translation notes and all the footnotes, and like start grabbing other books off my shelf, and it's a whole journey, and you know, in itself here, this little con. But I love the talk that Keizan Zenji offers us. And as is tradition, he also offers a verse. So here's his little verse, and he has a little little antecedent or something. He writes before the verse, this mountain monk would like to say a few words. Would you like to listen? It's just the ultimate consent. It's just, I'm gonna do this poem now. Are you okay? Does it sound good? It's just like this old man is going to try, you know? How's that sound? And here's the koan. Here's the poem, the verse. A splendid branch issues from the old plum tree. At the same time, obstructing thorns flourish everywhere. A splendid branch issues from the old plum tree. Who's the old plum tree? What branch is he extending? She extending? They are extending. So, pretty wild, amazing story. And those of you that are new to our practice might be starting to understand why this December 8th and this whole week is very important to us. Yeah. Why it's of such singular significance. Because he said it. He said why it's important. It's the total expressions of Buddhas. It's the total expression of your life, right? Because this moment is awakening. Is what Keizan is telling us. And it contains everything that is and that will be in all the 10 directions. And I think kind of almost just as important as it contains everything you need for this moment. And that's why we call it the lion's roar. It just blew the walls off, you know? But it contains everything you need because, just like this moment, you aren't lacking. There's nothing you lack. So when we say this, I and the great earth and all beings simultaneously achieve the way, some of us feel a little bit like, well, that's fine for them. Or, well, yeah, they could do it. At that time in Buddha's time. But here, now, or this one, me? And then the story goes on to tell us how the rest of Buddha's life was spent teaching, and really just teaching that one thing, that awakened light he was sharing. That old monk with just his robe and bowl, nothing special, yet so complete in his expression. I and all beings in this great earth awaken. But awaken to what? So Kazan brought this story forth for us. And he's saying, look at this. Study this moment. Study this awakening because it's your awakening. And then he said, I want to hear a verse from you. I want to hear what words you have. Don't borrow from dead masters. Don't cheat and look at the paper next to yours. What do you have to say from this life? I want your heart here. I want your whole heart here. And he's saying, when you have that, you have awakening itself. Because it's your awakening. And if it's not here, where would it be? And if it's not now, when would it be? I don't understand. Huh? But it's that trick we understand that in order to grasp something, we have to first let go of what we think it should be. So Kazan, so generous in his way, explaining it and trying to explain it in as intimate way as possible for him in, you know, the 12th century. And in his words, there's a little admonishments and warnings about where to get, not to get stuck. And one of those ways that we get stuck is not letting go, or the need to kind of prop ourselves up and prop our story up and say it should be like this. Or... And what if it, you know, just beyond our insecurity or just beyond our story or our narrow view, we could just release it. So instead, we use this awakening to guide us, just like Buddha did. We practice by dropping off our biases and settling into this silence together so that we can just meet ourselves directly, exactly as we are. So we can meet this moment exactly as it is. And that's why we practice like this. And that's why we do a Rohatsu session too, or any session. But this one in particular, we don't really have any Dharma talks. We don't really have any liturgy or ceremony. It's just, we've been practicing this tradition for a while, this kind of style, just for this December retreat. Just having a week of just sitting. Just sitting with the crackling of the fire or the early morning mist, or the soft sway of the trees here, or the soft, wise faces of our friends. But we get stuck sometimes, so we have to practice. We have to see our views and see how we get so fixed on them. So we can practice moving beyond that. Moving beyond our biases to use what we have in our life. There's a teaching I really like from from Bernie Roshi. He would say, use all the ingredients of your life to make the supreme meal, he would say sometimes. Use all the ingredients of your life. What do you got? What can go in the bowl? What can you make with it? Instead of what's lacking, what's not there. We've been eating Thanksgiving leftovers for days here. Just what do we got? What can we do? And now it's a sandwich, and now it's a soup, and now it's this. What can we do with what we have? And it reminds me of a little story. Along with so I'll tell you this little story. Along with being deaf, I also have some other disabilities, and sometimes it affects the way I move and affects my spine, and so it affects my legs. So sometimes I walk with canes or crutches. Sometimes I use a wheelchair. Sometimes I use crutches. Sometimes, like today, I don't. And one time I was on a college campus nearby where I'm a chaplain, and I was using my crutches, and I got most of the way across campus before needing to plop down in the kind of central quad building and take a break, take a rest before getting back up on the crutches and moving on to the next thing. And I had made it only so far, and I was taking a rest. Somebody came to service the vending machines, the candy and soda pop machines in front of me. And I'm sitting there on this bench, and I'm just kind of in a sweat and with my crutches. This is hard. This is really hard, And I'm all caught up in my pain. In my story about this is too hard. It shouldn't be this hard. It shouldn't be like this. I shouldn't feel this way. I deserve something else. All this. Just putting a little bit of suffering on top of my suffering. I'm watching, and I'm just decompressing, resting for a minute. And this man comes up with his keys, and he's opening the fronts of the vending machines, and he's restocking, five more Snickers bars, three more packs of peanuts, like this. And he's knocking, and he sees me and gives me a nod. I give him a nod, and we feel a little connection, just in that moment. And he's working away. And then at one point, he goes and he grabs a pack of candy, and he looks at me and he throws it. What's this for? It's a pack of gummy bears. Thanks. And he says, it's the gelatin. It'll help your ankle. And he keeps talking, and he locks his machine up, and he walks off. There's nothing wrong with my ankle. Way off, right? But in that moment, what does he have to offer? A1, A2, A3. He just has Snickers, peanut. His apothecary cabinet is this big. And all he could reach, gelatin, that'll help. And he could offer it. And then just with the offering, it's released. Back to work. My sleeve just went into my cup. Thank you. It's released. It help? No. Gummy bears did not help, but they helped. I could say, well, I'm a vegetarian. I won't eat the gelatin and this and that. Just receiving the offering fully. For what it is. And what it was a great medicine. So every time I find myself propping myself up with a story or pushing myself down, I know I'm just reinforcing that duality. I'm good at this. Oh, I'm terrible at this. It should be like this. It shouldn't be like that. I'm too disabled. I'm not disabled enough. I'm so stuck in my delusions. I'm so enlightened. All we're doing is just placing ourselves on one side or the other of a duality. And maybe that's what he meant. He extends this branch, extends this plum branch, but be careful because these obstructing thorns flourish everywhere. So in our tradition, we say, oh, I don't know. Or don't know mind, or only don't know. Because when we don't know, and we're not holding on to something so tightly, this little crack appears, this little space for us, a little more room to be, to breathe. Because when we step away from fixity, when we step away from a fixed thing or a stuck point of view, that's when we gain things, right? Because the moment's not fixed. I'm not fixed. I'm flowing on and on. The moment together, we're flowing on and on. So maybe I don't see the full picture, like the guy throwing gummy bears. Maybe I don't know the full story. Maybe the story I have is playing on repeat. It's distracting me from what's actually happening. So I'd like to teach you some signs, some sign language. Are you okay to learn a sign with me? You want to learn a sign? I'd like to teach a sign or two every now and then. So the sign I'm going to teach today is letting go. This is a great sign. So we just take our fist out and hold it out in front of us. Just makes sense, right? Letting go. But the act, that's not the actual sign. Because the actual sign in American Sign Language is letting go. It's dropping. It's dropping. It's like that. Why do we sign it like this? Why do we sign it like this then? Because I notice I don't like this. I'm not comfortable with this thing. Ah, letting go is what I want. I want it gone. Let's get it out of my life. But really, a lot of times our practice is like this. It's just releasing our grip. It's still there. It still can be what it is, what it needs to be, right? So, in order to grasp what is, we must first release what we think it should be. Right? Just letting go. So, that's our sign for letting go. So now we have a very advanced practice. We have the letting go of letting go. How would we sign that? We have two hands, maybe get both hands, really letting go. I asked that one. So how would we sign the letting go of letting go? And somebody announced go and hide their hands. I said, that's pretty good. I like that. The letting go of letting go is right? Maybe we could play with it. And then one more sign, a sign for Buddha. Now we have Shakyamuni Buddha, this historical figure, but when we talk about all these Buddhas and ancestors, and when we talk about Martin Luther King Buddha and all these other people, what kind of Buddhas are they? So we have a different sign for that. We have awake, awake, being. An awakened one, an awakened being. Now, as a funny trick, well, just lost our interpreter, maybe. Yes. Here we go. Yep. So, okay. Let me just close up this talk a little bit. But so yes, this is what the Buddha did. He sat down and he dropped and he let go. He released everything, culture, ability, identity, all of these things. And it enabled him to inherit everything and enabled him to be in that moment-to-moment flow. And when he had this awakening, what did he say? He said, I and all beings simultaneously, I and all beings in the great earth. Simultaneously achieve the way. And I thought that that's so amazing because from the moment of realization, he didn't express my achievement. This is what I did. From the moment he expressed deep, deep connection. That's what it felt like to him. A deep connection with things, deep connection with the earth, a deep connection with other beings. That's how it came up. That's how it was expressed. And I had one last kind of little story and anecdote before we kind of close. And I thought this was kind of funny. I used to live in New York City. I lived there for many years. And when I was practicing there, I practiced with a community that sometimes would do a session like this, or do 8 days of meditation. And sometimes we would just do a single all day, all night meditation. It's kind of, so we would meditate all through the night, like Shakyamuni Buddha did. And then, like Shakyamuni Buddha, he saw the morning star, right? He said, I and all beings at this view. So I was practicing this Uhatsu, and I did overnight. This community. And I remember thinking to myself, I was going to practice all night and I was going to go straight to work after meditating all night. Don't worry, I wasn't operating heavy machinery or anything, but I've had various success over the years trying to do things like that. But I remember when we finished the Suhatsu, I remember thinking I had enough time that I could go from the temple to the river. And I wanted to see the morning star, like Buddha did. I just finished sitting all night. I wanted to see Venus. I wanted to see this morning star rising up. Have any of you tried to stargaze in New York City before? So I went all the way to the river thinking, I have just enough time to do this. This is my chance, right? And I had an app on my phone that could give you kind of an overlay, and wherever you pointed it, it could kind of help you identify the stars. So I was kind of looking at what I saw, and I was finding vaguely, this is Southwest. Where is this morning star? It should be here every December. I'm looking and I'm looking. And I could see the Pleiades, which I knew were nearby. And then my app enabled me to find M44, which is known as the Beehive Cluster. And that should be right nearby. And I'm looking and I'm like, where the heck is Venus? Where the heck is this morning star? So I'm standing there by the river. And I'm thinking, I don't have time. I really need to see Venus before I get on the train and go back to work. So I go into this little stupid app and I type in Venus. Show me the transit of Venus. Show me where Venus is. And it says, oh, Venus is right here. And when I went to click on it, it says, oh, for $1.99, you can download the planets in the exoplanet. I said, enlightenment's behind a paywall. He said, how could you do this to me? I can't see Venus. And I thought, how can I wake up to the morning star if I can't see the morning star? Of course, we know this is wrong. And in a moment of just kind of like, oh, this is so silly standing here looking at the river. It's time to go to work. And I turned my phone off. And in that moment, standing looking out at the river, holding my phone up, all I could see was my dimly lit face and the thousands and thousands of lights of the city behind me. Where's Venus? Where's Venus holding up this mirror? Where's Venus? Where's my morning star? Oh. In order to grasp what is, I had to release what I thought it should be. So this week, whether you're joining us for Rohatsu sit or not, or you're making your way back down, back to work and life and responsibilities that call to you back there, know that it's not only entirely possible in this lifetime, in this moment, it's your vow to do so, to wake up. And you can chase your thoughts, or you can play out these situations and stories in your head, or you could come back to this ground right beneath you, like Buddha did. All the many stars all around you, just like Buddha did. And allow them to verify your enlightenment. They rang the bell for food, and I would not want to be late for food. So we won't have questions and answers, but I'll be around. Okay? So maybe you can find me if you have a burning question. And also, I will say one last thing. There's maybe still a little room in Wahatsu Sashin. So if you're thinking about it, join. Come join us.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.